Hi everyone, this is Dr. Cheryl Selman and welcome to What Women Must Know. This is a show dedicated to empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. And it's always a great opportunity to have these wonderful conversations with people who have a wealth of knowledge and they are so willing to share it with all of us. And so we're going to be doing a similar exploration today. This is part of my series that I am calling Wholehearted Health Month, because we know we are in the month of February, which is Heart Month. And so we're going to be looking at the Wholehearted Health Month focus on what we really need to know to create healthy hearts, healthy vascular system, and get on the right track, really learn the truth. So before we delve into a really fascinating topic, I want to encourage everyone who have not yet visited my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, to do so, because there's some great free special reports there, and they particularly relate to how to support your heart health. So feel free to just opt into the newsletter there. You'll have access to lots of other articles as well as videos. And you might as well go over to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, because there I get to post on a daily basis great information and articles and great heart healthy recipes and all the things that really will make a difference to our health and our life. So that's what this program is about, is really providing you with access to great information. And today we're going to be discussing the great cholesterol con, the truth about what really causes heart disease and how to avoid it. And the guest who is going to really share so much wisdom today is Dr. Malcolm Kendrick, who is, by the way, calling us all the way from the UK. And Dr. Kendrick is a practitioner, general practitioner in the UK. He is the author of the book, The Great Cholesterol Con, The Truth About What Really Causes Heart Disease and How to Avoid It. He is also a member of the International Network of Cholesterol Skeptics, a group of scientists and researchers who share the belief that cholesterol does not cause cardiovascular disease. And he has a wonderful blog that is called drmalcolmkendrick.org. So if you'd like to learn more about the discussion we're going to have today, that's where to go, drmalcolmkendrick.org. And it's my great pleasure to welcome Dr. Malcolm Kendrick to the show today. Hello.
Hello, hello. Good afternoon.
Well, thank you for being with us today, and I know you have a really powerful message. You have been speaking out about what your research has found. You know, as a member of the International Network of Cholesterol Skeptics, which I didn't know there was such a network, but I'm really glad there is, I know that you have bucked the system, so to speak, and that's what we're going to talk about. I'm really curious to know the truth about what really causes heart disease, and most importantly, how do we avoid that potential problem? So let's talk about the great cholesterol con. First of all, I think we just need to get some of our terms straight before we can delve into this conversation. Why don't we mention cholesterol? Let's start there. What is cholesterol?
Well, it is a compound. Cholesterol is found in all cell membranes. It's the basic building block for most human steroids. So sex hormones are made from it, and in fact, vitamin D is made from it. So the body uses cholesterol in all sorts of different ways. You primarily will get it from eating food. I think the biggest area that people get confused about is when we talk about cholesterol levels in the blood, but actually you don't have any cholesterol in your blood, because cholesterol can't be dissolved in water or blood, so it's actually carried around in a small spherical lipoprotein usually called LDL or low-density lipoprotein. There are other lipoproteins. So when people say it's your cholesterol level, it's not your cholesterol level. Cholesterol is synthesized in the liver. Mainly, you get some in your diet. It's then sent out in these little lipid sort of spheres, a bit like soap droplets or whatever, into your bloodstream. And it's then these little lipoproteins that's what we measure when we say it's your cholesterol level, if that makes sense.
So this has been the prevailing theory for quite a long time now, that this increase in heart disease that we've seen in Western societies is related somehow to our cholesterol levels, which are related somehow to eating foods that supposedly raise our cholesterol, all of which, of course, is actually not the case, is it?
Well, it's not even remotely the case. I mean, there's some debate about whether if you eat a diet high in saturated fats, or the terminology, unfortunately, just becomes ever more confusing whenever you talk about it. But we'll say saturated fat raises your cholesterol level. Now, of course, you have to try and explain why that could possibly happen, because fat and cholesterol are completely different compounds. They do different jobs in the body. The only time they ever meet, really, is when they're put into one of these little lipoproteins called a very low-density lipoprotein. The liver manufactures these, sends them out into the bloodstream. So why would eating anything alter the level of, if you like, low-density lipoprotein, which is not cholesterol, in your blood? And the argument seems to be that somehow there's some negative feedback system, that if you eat lots of saturated fat, then your body's LDL receptor level goes down, and this means you have more LDL in your blood. But when you start tracking this down, it doesn't actually make any sense at all. I mean, the two substances are just different things. Interestingly, if you eat too much carbohydrate, for example, your liver gets full up with sugar, and your liver then converts the sugar into fat. The fat that it converts it to is purely saturated fat. And then it's combined with cholesterol and sent out into the bloodstream. So when you start looking into the actual biochemistry and physiology here, the idea that diet alters your LDL level, aka what they call LDL cholesterol, starts to just not make any sense at all.
Well, that's going to be good news for all those people who are still eating egg white omelets, don't you think?
Well, I think I would call an egg white omelet something other than an omelet, and it would be a very rude word, but good luck to them. The best bit of the egg. What I say to people is, why do you think there's so much cholesterol in an egg yolk? And the answer is that it takes an awful lot of cholesterol to build a healthy chicken. You need an awful lot of cholesterol to create the chicken in the egg. Without it, it wouldn't be a chicken. It would be something that just wouldn't work. I mean, there is a condition, a human condition called Smith-Oppy-Levitt syndrome. Is that right? I think that's right. I'm sure that's right. Where the body's incapable of producing enough cholesterol. So you have very low cholesterol levels. And when these babies are born with very low cholesterol levels, they have severe genetic problems. They've got neurological problems. Their brains don't function properly. And essentially, they very rarely live for very long. So having very low cholesterol levels genetically is extremely bad for you. These children don't really survive beyond about a few months. So when people talk about, avoiding cholesterol, I just think, well, this stuff is really important in your body. Without it, we would definitely die. Our brains are 25% dry weight cholesterol. Synapses in our brain are made from cholesterol. And in fact, they found, if you do experiments on animals, that if you don't feed cholesterol into the brain, or you stop it producing it, then you can't create new synapses, so you can't create memories. So essentially, you can't think. So cholesterol is utterly essential. I mean, the neurotransmitter, serotonin, is based on cholesterol as its primary molecule. So it's part of our brain. It's a function of our brain. It makes up the synapses. It helps us to think. It makes our steroid hormones. It creates stability in our cell membranes, and it allows our cells to function properly. So when people start saying they're trying to not eat cholesterol, I say, well, it doesn't really matter, because your liver will produce as much cholesterol as you need, because it's such an essential substance.
And I think that's such a critical point for people to understand. Cholesterol has been made the enemy, and it's as though our purpose with medications that are prescribed is to lower it or reduce it as much as possible, because we have been taught erroneously that this is a really bad thing going on in our body and putting us at risk. And, of course, this is what you are really addressing, all of these myths. And I think the point you made that it is just so critical how important it is to maintain healthy cholesterol levels, because it is a precursor steroid hormone. It's the raw material from which all sorts of things are made in the body, and without it, we cannot be healthy, we cannot function, we cannot live.
Well, we certainly can't live. I mean, if you sort of looked at which, you know, chemicals do most things in the body, I'm not sure because I've never looked at it, but cholesterol must be just, I would think, the top number one used everywhere by the body for almost everything chemical that we've got, which is why the liver keeps manufacturing it and grabs hold of it. So it's completely nuts to say this is a dangerous substance. And when we're talking about cholesterol being damaging, we're not even talking about cholesterol. We're talking about this lipoprotein called low-density lipoprotein, which is not cholesterol. It contains cholesterol. Mm. So, you know, focusing on cholesterol, I mean, the terminology is bonkers anyway because it's non-understandable. It took me quite a while even to find out what all this terminology meant, because it's very difficult to find out even in textbooks. So you have to go and sort of work it out yourself in many ways. So when they talk about, for instance, triglycerides, which you may have heard of, well, triglycerides are also known as very low-density lipoproteins, which I talked about before. Very low-density lipoproteins are the things that the liver makes, puts out into the bloodstream. And interestingly, what happens to very low-density lipoproteins is that they shrink down and down in size until they become low-density lipoproteins. So you can't find that out from reading any textbook. You have to go and ask people, well, where do they come from? Where do these LDLs come from? The liver doesn't make them. They come from very low-density lipoprotein. And interestingly, when you look at it, after you've eaten a meal high in carbohydrate, your very low-density lipoprotein level goes through the roof. But your LDL level, your low-density lipoprotein level, stays exactly and precisely the same. So we have all this VLDL being created. The only thing that can happen to it is it turns into LDL, and yet as you eat and the VLDL goes up, your LDL doesn't. So the body is capable of controlling your LDL levels completely. It's just reabsorbed into the liver if it's not needed by the rest of the body. So wherever you start looking, the stories you're told about what makes it go up or what makes it go down and whether it's bad just start falling apart and disintegrating. I mean, when I started medicine more years ago than I care to remember, you know, the stories about fat, increased cholesterol and cholesterol caused heart disease, and it all seemed quite reasonable and I sort of believed it. And I'm not entirely sure what triggered me to think it's wrong, but I started looking into it and it just didn't make any sense. No part of it made any sense. I mean, the idea initially was that if you ate cholesterol, your cholesterol level went up. But Ansel Keys, who started the entire heart diet nonsense in about the mid-1950s, found that if you fed human beings cholesterol, nothing happened to their cholesterol level, i.e. their LDL level. So he changed his story at that point. He said, oh, it's not cholesterol, it's saturated fat. But he couldn't explain, and no one can, and still no one can explain, why that would make your cholesterol level go up or your LDL level go up. So everywhere you look, there's an apparent, I think that the story itself has this fantastic sort of simplicity. You eat cholesterol, your cholesterol level goes up, it's then absorbed or sticks to artery walls. I mean, that makes sense, people can understand that. But actually, no part of that story makes the slightest sense when you start looking at it. And it all starts to disintegrate. And, you know, when I started looking at it in more detail, I asked questions like, okay, so we get atherosclerotic plaques, which is the underlying disease, if you like, thickenings in the arteries. In your arteries, they exist. But you do not get any atherosclerotic plaques in your veins in your body. It's not quite true, but for the sake of this argument, it's entirely true. You don't get thickenings and plaques in your veins. Mm-hmm. Now, your veins and your arteries are identical in structure, except the veins are thinner because they don't have to deal with so much pressure. So if the idea is that LDL, bad cholesterol, whatever term you happen to like using for it, is absorbed through your artery walls and then causes these thickenings, why doesn't it happen in veins? Why do veins never become atherosclerotic? If the process is having a high level, Well, what's happening? So when you start asking questions like this and you don't get any answers, you start thinking, actually, this really doesn't make any sense. And then you have to start looking at it in more and more and more detail, and you start looking at the processes that are going on, which is what I've been doing for about the last 25 years. So I'm well beyond bothering about cholesterol causing heart disease. That's just complete nonsense as far as I'm concerned.
You know, that's really an interesting point, that the veins don't get the same type of atherosclerotic scarring. Why not? Do you know?
Yes, I do know. But that's quite complicated. But to put it simply, obviously arteries are exposed to higher pressures, so they are more likely to be damaged to the lining of the artery wall, which is the endothelium, which is the single layer that lines the artery wall. So if you take a vein from the leg and stick it into the heart as a coronary artery bypass graft, within a very short amount of time, it's full of atherosclerosis.
Ah. Oh, interesting.
So what is very clear is that something is happening because it's having to deal with higher pressures, it's having to deal with the heart pumping, biomechanical stress. So essentially what's happening is that veins are not under so much pressure or potential damage, because if you look at the lungs, where of course everything's reversed because veins are called arteries and arteries are called veins because of the way that works, but if you get pulmonary hypertension, which is where you get high blood pressure in the lungs, you will develop atherosclerosis in those blood vessels. That's the only time it happens. But, of course, arteries are called veins, but that doesn't really matter. But essentially, you need to have pressure. You need to have biomechanical things happening to the vessels in order that atherosclerosis will occur. And so then the answer to that is, well, what's happening and why can that happen? The very straightforward answer is that the lining, the endothelium, the single cell wall, single cell that lines the arteries, can be damaged and stripped off at areas of high mechanical stress. So, for instance, the arteries in your neck, as you know, are quite often where you'll get atherosclerosis developing. That's a high-pressure area. It's called a bifurcation. There's a lot of turbulence. There's a lot of movement. So these arteries are under a great deal of pressure and stress, so they're more likely to break down. When they break down, the moment that happens is a clot forms over that area to seal off the damage, and then the whole thing goes under a system of repair. So essentially what's happening in these cases is that there's damage to the endothelium, a clot forms, the clot stops forming, and it's then covered over with more endothelium, and it's drawn into the artery wall. At that point, if you get, that probably is just dealt with in most cases, but if you keep getting repeated episodes on that same point, then the repair mechanisms will be overwhelmed, and you'll end up with more muck and gunge building up in that area, which is what we call an atherosclerotic plaque. And people say that it's full of cholesterol. How does it get there? I say, well, it's full of cholesterol because cholesterol is the body's primary repair mechanism. And LDL, carrying a lot of cholesterol, is something that is attracted to areas of damage to act as basically a building block for repair. So I think if you're Avnaskov, who started things, his analogy is, why do you find so many fire engines at the site of fires? Does that mean that fire engines cause fires? No, it means that fire engines put fires out. That's why they're there. So as with many things in medicine, everyone's got everything the wrong way round, as usual. But if you're trying to explain how cholesterol can get through an artery wall and not through a vein wall, the answer is that LDL or cholesterol or whatever you term you want does not pass through the endothelium, because it can't, because that acts as a barrier. It arrives there when there is no endothelium, and that's how it appears to end up inside the artery wall, because it's carried through. No, it's not carried through. It arrives where there's no endothelium. It then sticks to that area. And then endothelial cells, which are constantly floating around in your bloodstream, they're called endothelial progenitor cells that are produced in the bone marrow. When they find an area of artery that's not got endothelium on it, stick to that area. They then grow. They then form a new layer of endothelium, if you like, underneath which is the plaque, that the thrombus or the blood clot, whatever you want to call it, that formed. And that is how you get past the endothelium. into the artery wall. That's why it never happens in veins, because in veins do not get stripped in that way, unless you take a vein and stick it in the heart, in which case it's put under that pressure. And because it's a vein and it's actually a weaker vessel or a thinner vessel than an artery, it's more likely to get constant damage to the plaque. The thrombus and the clotting system will build up more rapidly. So that's what's happening.
So there was a theory created that really had no basis in reality. It became the favorite theory of the medical profession, which, of course, then was in lockstep with the pharmaceutical industry, who had to find the solution, which was related to this false theory, which primarily is relying on the use of statin drugs to address a problem that doesn't really exist and actually can create worse things as a result. So I think that's what we need to talk about, the statins. And you'll really cringe at this, but my 90-year-old mother was encouraged to take statin drugs when she got her blood work up back from her doctor, which, you know, obviously I tried to explain to her why that was not a good idea. And she's getting pressure from her cardiologist and her primary doctor, but fortunately chose not to go ahead because I was trying to educate her. But, you know, we can talk about why that would be a disaster for a 90-year-old woman who didn't have really any high cholesterol readings anyway, but that would be irrelevant even if it were. Maybe you can comment on that, and then from there we can just go into the whole statin myth.
Well, firstly, there's no evidence in any population over the age of about 65 using statins. It tended to be that the trials were all done in men, for starters. Whether that's relevant or not is not certain, but there definitely appears to be different effects on men and women when you take statins, in that the benefits, such as they are, and they are not very great, but they do exist, seem to be greater in men than women. Now, people will argue that that is not true, but if you look at the data themselves, it's very clear that women get less benefit. The counter-argument is that women are at lower risk, so any benefit would be thus lower, so they actually get the same proportional benefit. My counter-argument is, you mean they get less benefit. But, you know, in a 90-year-old woman, there is no evidence that a statin would have any benefit at all on increased life expectancy or even reducing the risk of cardiovascular disease, especially if she's not had any previous history of heart disease such as angina or previous heart attack or stroke or something like that. So, I mean, all that she could get would be adverse effects from taking the statin in that case, in my opinion.
And let's talk about some of those adverse effects, because I think the list is actually growing longer and longer these days.
Well, if you listen to the hype, statins have no more side effects than placebo. I mean, how anyone can possibly state that? Just, well, stop doing medicine because you're obviously not listening to your patients. You're ignoring everything they tell you, or you're not asking them. I mean, according to the statistics, I mean, I don't practice full-time in medicine, but even if I did, I should probably see one person with a side effect per year, maybe, out of the population that are on statins. I mean, when I ask people directly, every single person that I have asked suffers at least one adverse effect from a statin. Sometimes it's relatively minor, but sometimes it's enormously major. And I have had people, when one of the places I work, which is a rehabilitation, like a cottage hospital, one woman, I stopped her from taking statins, and a week, and this lady was about to be, had an advocate because she was incapable of making decisions. She was considered demented. She couldn't move. I took her off the statins, and a week later, this woman walked off the unit, chatting to the nurses happily. I mean, they just could not believe it. Now, that was the most spectacular and most rapid example of statin-induced muscle pain and dementia that I've come across. But I just see so many people. And very often the patients don't believe me. A man came in who was getting pain in his wrist, quite severe pain, and it wouldn't go away. I said, well, try stopping the statin for a month or two and see what happens, because I suspect the pain might go away. And he went, well, I've been on statins for 5-10 years. I don't see how it could possibly work, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, just try it. Won't do any harm stopping for a while. And he came back 2 months later and said, you know what, the pain in my wrist is completely gone. I didn't believe you, but you were right. And he also said, and I just feel so much better. I feel like a new man. I didn't realize how tired I was. I didn't realize the little energy. I didn't realize how I was forgetting things. He said, this man had quite a high-powered job. And he said he used to do Sudoku and a crossword puzzle. And he said, I just couldn't do it any longer. I didn't realize. I just thought, my God, I can't do this any longer. And he said, and now I can do it fine. I'm back to where I was. And part of the biggest problem with the statin side effects is that they are insidious. They mimic old age, if you like, as they would do if you understood why they cause those adverse effects. And my motto is that statins. I've forgotten my motto is. I don't know. Just it's quite clever. I'm getting
you're
wrong
not
with
on
that,
the yeah. statins, are you?
Oh no, I said no. I'm not. I said, statins add 15 years to your life. I said they don't make you live 15 years longer. They make you feel 15 years older.
Yeah.
And I think that's about what they do to people. They just turn people down, and they just make them, people who were walking can't walk, people getting muscle pains, they're tired, they've got no energy. In men, they cause impotence, memory loss, muscle pains, stomach pains. And I think they can cause some really serious problems as well. There is some evidence from the World Health Organization that they can trigger amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, which in America, I believe, is known as Lou Gehrig's disease.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
Yes, really.
Maybe this is a good time for us to take a quick break, and then we come back, and we can just go on with all this really enlightening and shocking, and hopefully for a lot of people listening, it just will get you really angry because we've been conned, as Dr. Kendrick's book says, the great cholesterol con, and it's time for all of us to wake up and take our power back and find the keys to really get healthy, and that's what we're going to talk about when we come back from our break. So this is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You are listening to What Women Must Know. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Not too stroppy, I hope.
Okay, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. We are talking to Dr. Malcolm Kendrick, who is being very stroppy, and we like stroppy people on this show because he does such a great job at really dispelling all of the myths that are associated with cholesterol. And since this is our Wholehearted Health Month series, we're really getting to the heart of the matter of what's going on with the traditional approach to supporting our heart health and actually what is contributing to this growing incidence of heart disease, and it isn't what you think. So we've been talking about some of the dangers of statins, and Dr. Kendrick, let's talk a little bit more about the statin drugs, which, there are doctors here encouraging the government to add statins to the water supply. Would you believe that? Would you believe it? I don't think it'll ever happen, thank God, but there are doctors who still to this very day are encouraging governments to add statins into the water supply, as if we don't have enough toxic substances in our water right now.
Well, I think the first thing to say is obviously, just from a purely practical point of view, that would be bonkers, because the amount of statin you'd have to add would be about several millions of tons, I would imagine. But I think what they mean is basically everyone should just be getting statins almost from the moment they crawl out of the womb to the moment they die, which would obviously be a bit quicker if they kept taking statins. But I think a lot of doctors do. They believe the hype. They believe that these drugs have no side effects, or I use the word adverse effects because side effects are not necessarily negative. And that, people will live longer, happier lives, and there's no side effects, and it's just wonderful because your whole heart health. I was at a meeting for doctors and educational meetings run by a very bright lady, very good, really entertaining. But she talks about giving your heart a hug. And she says, have you given your heart a hug with statins? And I had to sort of virtually leave the room at that point because I thought, that's not really what you're doing here. But there are really, the medical profession has been, many of them have been hook, line, and sinkered into this this view. And they've been told it again and again. And And that's the reality. When you, a fascinating study that I was looking at recently, which is not on statins, but was on blood pressure lowering medication, where they asked doctors whether they thought their patients' quality of life had improved taking the blood pressure lowering drugs. Then they asked the patients whether they thought their quality of life had improved taking the blood pressure lowering drugs. And then they did something which I've never seen before or since. They asked the relatives of the patients whether they thought the patient had the quality of life had got better, stayed the same, or worse. And when they asked the doctors, and this was not a huge study, it was 75 patients, every single doctor said that every single patient's quality of life had improved taking the blood pressure lowering tablet. Half of the patients thought their quality of life had improved, and every single one of the relatives of the patients thought that the patient's quality of life had got worse.
Wow.
So the part of the problem here is that people see what they want to see. You know, doctors want to help patients. They believe that they're putting them on statins, the cholesterol goes down. They, in their hearts, they think this is such a wonderful thing that they convince themselves that the patients are not only have lower cholesterol, wonderful whoopee-doo, but also they feel better, and they are better, and their lives are better. You know, as Voltaire said, it is in the art of self-deception that we practice the greatest invention. And we are in a situation where people just fool themselves. They think their patients are feeling better. So they, you know, when they come in the room and say, how are you getting on with the statin? Fine, good, excellent, super, carry on. And this is, it becomes a self-referential thing. The patient says, fine, no problem. But if you say to that patient, sit them down, which I do, and say, right, a lot of people get side effects from statin. For instance, and I go through a list of, you know, the commonest is muscle pain. A lot of people actually get angry and frustrated and irritable, which is something that people don't talk about. And, you know, sometimes you get memory loss and sometimes you've got less energy and blah, blah, blah. And I go through a list of the top five or six, adverse effects, but I call them side effects when I'm speaking to patients. And you can see their eyes going, you can see their brains clicking behind, going, oh, I do feel like that. And if they bring a relative in, the relative, you can see them going, you're describing my wife and or husband, you know.
So what is that list of top side effects?
The top side effect is muscle pain and joint pain. I'd sort of put them together, if you like. That's the commonest one, so aches and pains in joints, aches and pains in muscles. The second commonest one is loss of, what I've discovered is loss of memory, not thinking as clearly. It's maybe something you won't pick up if you did a question like, you know, add 2 and 4, they still say 6, but things like doing a Sudoku or a crossword puzzle become more difficult. That's probably number 2. Stomach pains, I find it increasingly something that people complain of as well. A general sense of just not having any energy, not being able to do things. I would say depression and anxiety and irritability is probably another one that's right up there. And the final one, I've just forgotten what it is, but it'll come to me if I think about it. There's just a whole series of things that it can cause.
I think there is more and more awareness of the relationship between the use of these statin drugs and that growing incidence of dementia.
Yes.
Which a global amnesia condition, which is pretty scary because we're seeing the rise in dementia and Alzheimer-like conditions. And this incidence of dementia is directly related to the use of statin drugs for lowering cholesterol levels. Can you just mention that a little bit and say a few things about that?
Yeah, well, I think that the problem you always have in an individual case is that some people get dementia without being on statins. So saying it's definitely the statin. I mean, the weird thing is that there seems to be this bombardment coming out saying that statins protect against dementia and stop you getting neurodegenerative diseases. Well, how? How could that possibly be? We know, for example, that nerve cells, neurons, have got an awful lot of cholesterol in them and that their cell membranes are very sensitive to low cholesterol levels. things like Parkinson's disease, for instance, is due to, when you look at it, a lack of cholesterol in the what's it called, the substantia nigra area in the brain. We know that Huntington's chorea is due to a malfunctioning cholesterol synthesis in the neurons. We know that a lot of neurological conditions have a direct problem with cholesterol synthesis and or production. We also know that cholesterol is basically what makes up synapses in your brain. We know that cholesterol makes up serotonin. So if you have a low cholesterol level in your blood, or you lower it artificially, it cannot be making your nervous system or your brain or whatever you want to call it, neurological system, healthy. It is going to be damaging it. It must damage it. We know that if you give statins to women who are pregnant, by mistake, because it's happened, that in 50% of cases, the children's neurological systems just don't develop. Brain's not fusing together. I mean, really horrible, disgusting genetic defects are caused by statins taken in pregnancy. Although I have read things saying that pregnant women should take statins. I mean, what? Mm. What? And we know that a condition where cholesterol synthesis, syndrome, where you can't produce enough cholesterol, they end up with severe neurological defects. And we're saying that if you lower cholesterol and get rid of cholesterol from your brain, that's going to protect your brain. That's nonsense, and there are very clear studies showing that if you give people statins, it lowers their scoring on what they call a mini mental scale in the UK. I'm not sure if they use it in America, by about 2 to 3 points, which is quite significant. And when you stop the statin, it goes back up. So, if you look at how statins work, and you look at how the brain works, and you look at how statins interfere with the brain working, well, of course it's going to cause neurological problems. It almost must do. And so people who start saying that it protects against Alzheimer's and protects against Parkinson's, protects against, this is just utter nonsense. I know where it comes from. It comes from the fact that initially when people who were put on statins had high cholesterol levels. High cholesterol levels protect against Parkinson's and multiple sclerosis and et cetera. So what you're doing is you're getting a self-selected population who are already less likely to get these diseases. You put them on a statin, and you say, oh, it's a statin that stopped them getting these diseases. And you go, no, that's just the wrong way around. So everywhere you look, people just look at it in one direction, which is the wrong direction.
Right, and it is just supporting your own misperceptions. You, as you said, you just see what you want to see. And in this case, it's a whole industry and a whole theory that is just, a huge, huge complex that has supported a myth that unfortunately is wrong, number one, and number two, is harmful to us. So, well, in the time we have left, I know that you have a lot of insight, and the research you've done is looking at what we can do to create a healthy cardiovascular system. So what are some of your recommendations for people? And by the way, when you said that, well, of course, you don't believe people should be on statins. I really don't believe people should be on statins. But you said something that's really powerful for those that still believe it or have been encouraged, that anyone over the age of 65, it's adversely recommended to be on a statin medication. It can really compromise your health and your brain function as you get older. And I just want to reemphasize that.
I agree. I think young, healthy people, if you like, have still got a lot of reserve and therefore may not notice a huge difference. Although when they gave statins to athletes in Austria, there was a study who had familial hypercholesterolemia, they were put on statins, and their athletic performance dropped to the point they had to stop taking them, otherwise they couldn't compete. Now, most of us are not operating at the sort of level that they were operating at, so we wouldn't perhaps notice it. But when you're getting older and you're, if you like, your function is lower, dropping it by another 15% can be the difference between you getting out of bed in the mornings and not getting out of bed in the mornings. You know, if your brain function is perfect, a loss of 2 points, you probably wouldn't kill you. But once you're operating down at 60%, if you drop to 50%, you really notice it. So I think that as people get older, the combined effect of getting older plus a statin is much more likely to knock them off their legs and mean that they can't do things that they wanted to do, and their memory really, really starts to fog. Whilst you say that people over 65 are not recommended, you know, in the UK, for example, where I am, we're told to put people on statins at age 80, 85, 90. I had a lady who was doubly incontinent, completely demented, unable to move in a nursing home, and I was asked if I could give her a liquid statin because she could no longer swallow the tablet that was a statin. Which I said, I think we'll be stopping that, won't we?
Yeah.
But I know if another doctor goes in, they'll just give her a liquid statin because, well, it's just, you know, you do feel like banging your head against a brick wall sometimes.
Right. Well, that's why we need people like you who have the courage to speak out, because the system is based on quicksand. We need to know that, and I think the word is starting to get out. So, Dr. Kendrick, what's it that you recommend to people to support healthy cardiovascular function? What are your guidelines?
Well, I think there's a number of things. One of them is exercise, and I'm not talking about going out for a run necessarily. I think walking outside is incredibly beneficial. I think a lot of psychological things are very important. Before we came on air, I was talking to you a bit about the blue zones, where people live longer than anywhere else in the world, and a lot of that is down to, if you like, friends, family, community, linking into your community, and having good social support networks. Those are very important things, which I would recommend for everyone. Meditation, yoga, and what we also discussed is trying to eat foods that are as natural as possible and have not been radiated, stuck in deep freeze, and then turned into sort of whatever it is they turned them into and processed within an inch of their life. I think we should try and live our lives and the things that we eat as naturally as possible. I'm not particularly say don't eat this or don't eat that. I'm very much more of a eat pretty much what you like person, so long as it's as fresh as it can be, as locally sourced as it can be, and those are definitely important things, because in the blue zones where people live longer, one of the things they do is they tend to be quite close to the land. A lot of them are farmers, a lot of them work on the land, and I think these are important things.
You know, it goes back to the realization that our cardiovascular system is connected to every other part of us, and every other part of us affects the health of our heart and our arteries, and we need to really return to this holistic integrated system that addresses everything from lifestyle to our thinking to our stress levels to the quality of the food. And that, you know, that's a critical component. I do know there are some holistic integrative doctors here that are really concerned about the effect of heavy metal contamination and its role on damaging the function of the heart and the arteries. Do you have any thoughts on that?
It's an area I don't really know. I mean, essentially, I can't believe our bodies are going to deal very well with heavy metals. It depends what you call them. I've looked into
mercury, arsenic, lead.
Fluoride, for instance, which is a pretty nasty substance that they stick in people. Say it makes their teeth better, but it doesn't. No, anything that gets in like mercury, lead, our bodies aren't designed to have these things inside them. We shouldn't have them inside us. Does it directly damage the cardiovascular system? Well, I suppose it must, because if you look at the evidence that's coming out more recently, air pollution, and air pollution is full of stuff like that, definitely increases the risk of dying of cardiovascular disease, heart disease, and strokes. And that must be due to toxins, because there's nothing else it could be due to, as far as I can see.
So what do you suggest to your patients as far as extra nutritional support to help remove some of the toxins?
I don't talk about reducing toxins, but there are some things that I advise that people should take. I advise they should go out in the sunshine, because sunlight is very good for your cardiovascular health. And it's been demonstrated recently in studies showing that people who have more sun exposure, it increases nitric oxide synthesis in their endothelium, which is the lining we need to keep healthy, and that these people are heart healthier. So vitamin D as well is an important cardiovascular heart health compound. Don't let that get too low. I also use a supplement that's called L-arginine, which you may have heard of. Mm-hmm. L-arginine increases, that's from the work by Ignario, increases nitric oxide synthesis in the endothelium. I advise that you keep your potassium levels up and eat more potassium, because that is definitely good for your heart, as is magnesium. And I also tell people to take coenzyme Q10 and vitamin K. So there's a number of things that if you had a perfectly healthy diet, you would get enough of these things in your diet, but most people don't. So supplementing with some of these things is very effective, and it can lower your blood pressure. You can come off blood pressure lowering medication, etc., etc. So there are some supplements, and if you go to my blog, there's a product that I was involved in helping to develop that has all these in it, but that's available online. But I do think that is definitely got a number of things in it that I think are healthy to the heart. I'm not sure how much you can clear toxins out of your body. Not an area that I know a lot about.
We should, at this point, let people know what your blog is so they can learn more about what you're doing and look at some of the products you've helped to formulate.
Is the only one I've helped to formulate. But the blog is Dr. Malcolm Kendrick. At the moment, I'm on a bit of a crusade against them, against the creation of guidelines that are damaging people, and trying to ensure that pharmaceutical companies would release their negative data about their drugs. Please, thank you very much if you're listening, because I think it's ridiculous that you can hide negative data and basically just keep it as a commercial secret from the public. We should know these things. I've tried to find out the serious adverse event data about statins, and they just won't let anybody see it. I think this is utterly ridiculous, and it needs to stop.
So, drug companies are good at letting people know only what they want them to know and hide anything else that isn't going to support.
Well, we know this is true. We know this is true. GSK was fined $3 billion in the States for hiding data showing that I'll probably get their actual antidepressant wrong, but I think it was Xerox that increased the risk of suicides in children taking it, and they just would not publish that data. And, you know, when I look at all, you know, the areas of within heart disease and statins, we're asking for data, you just can't see it. So we're kind of shooting in the dark a lot of the time about what these drugs actually do.
And how is your crusade going? Are you gaining traction amongst other practitioners who are waking up?
Well, it's
up?
Not entirely my crusade. I'm part of those other people. You may have heard of Ben Goldacre in the UK. He's very much into the old trials thing, which is trying to get all data from clinical trials released. Fiona Godley, who's the BMJ editor, is also into this. And if you want to really depress yourself, and I would recommend having a stiff drink before reading it, there's a book by Peter Goetsche, who's a researcher from Denmark who actually runs the Norwegian Cochrane Collaboration, and his book is called Deadly Medicines and Organized Crime, How Big Pharma Has Corrupted Healthcare, which is a fairly devastating title, but I think you'll
kind of expresses it perfectly, though.
Well, I'm amazed that, maybe I'm not amazed that he hasn't been dragged for libel in the UK, but he references everything he says. And it is a bit of a depressing situation, I think, that the medical profession is a great and fantastic thing. It's done a huge amount of good for people, but it's being dragged off into places that I don't like, and increasingly over the last 20 or 30 years has become, well, what I say, poodles. Do they use that word in America?
No.
Poodles for the pharmaceutical industry.
No, but I like it.
You maybe understand what it means. Yeah.
Well,
which song would you like me to sing, Mr. Pharmaceutical Company?
I really appreciate the fact that you have taken on this cause, that you are a bit of a heretic in your own right, and
I like to think of it as a
skeptic.
Standing
up. Well, skeptical do. But, you know, the courage to speak out against a trend and to be, you know, stand up and be counted in this matter, because it is affecting so many people's lives. And, you know, you do need courage. And I do appreciate you for having that courage and you know, listening to your convictions and moving forward, so you can help share the information with people around the world, like on this show. I think you are our heroes, and I just want you to be, you know, appreciated for what you're doing and for spending the word.
Somebody has to, I suppose, and I never really put myself in the in the box that said, you know, hero. I put myself in the box, and I just can't seem to stop doing it. I don't know why, but I think that I suppose because no one else seems, well, too few other people seem to want to stand out and make a noise about it.
Well, we only have a couple of minutes left, Dr. Kendrick. Is there anything you want to conclude our conversation with today?
Well, I think that the important thing, what I'm writing about at the moment, I'm writing another book, it's about people taking control over their own sort of destiny, if you like, and finding out information for themselves. I think we've moved beyond a time when the great expert spoke and we all went, wow, that must be true. I think that's caused great damage, has been the sort of lack of people, you know, challenging their own doctors, looking into things for themselves and deciding to take their own health into their own hands more and looking for information. And I think that, you know, I suppose my crusade would be to try to provide the information to people in ways that's as true as I can manage, if you like, because I know there are different interpretations, and I know that I may make statements that possibly, if you really started checking them up, you might say, well, I don't think that was quite right. But I do think that in general, people need to take, you know, more effort themselves to look beyond what comes out of what their doctors are told, because what their doctors are told comes from what they're told by other doctors, and what they're told usually comes from the pharmaceutical industry. So I'm afraid that health is not going to be found, improvement in health is not going to be found there. You need to start looking into people who are standing outside of the mainstream a bit, who have got different ideas, and listen to what they have to say. Make your own mind up. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Do I want to do that?
Yes. Well, thank you for your dedication helping to lift the veil for people. And I just wish you all the best, Dr. Kendrick. Let me just let our listeners know that we've been listening to Dr. Malcolm Kendrick share with us today the work and research he's been doing. He's the author of the best-selling book, The Great Cholesterol Con, The Truth About What Really Causes Heart Disease and How to Avoid It. If you'd like to go to his blog and learn more, which I really encourage you to do, it's drmalcolmkendrick.org, and there's certainly a place where you will get your mind expanded into the world of Cholesterol Con. Dr. Malcolm Kendrick, thank you so much for your time today. It's been such a pleasure, and I just really wish you all the best in the great work you're doing.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
And to all of you listening in, I'm so glad you were with us today, because I love these conversations and we are all learning together. And since this is my special series called Wholehearted Heart Month, this is another opportunity to really open up your heart, open up your mind to what's really going on. So until next time, this is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You are listening to What Women Must Know. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.